Okay, go ahead. Kimberly's our speaker.
Great.
You're on.
Hi, my name is Kimberly Lavessa Ross, and I'm a drug addict. And I would like to thank my dear warrior sister, Carol, for asking me this awesome privilege to share my experience, strength, and hope with you.
Are you feeling better?
I would also like to say that in addition to your request in the beginning of not eating or drinking or smoking and trying to keep our swearing to a minimum, which I totally understand, I would also like to try to ask you not to chat. Because what I'm realizing or coming to understand is that if this whole process of us going through recovery is about to be living in the moment, in the now, you know, when we're having these back front side chats, hey girl, good to see you. Oh, hey, you know, whatever. It's sort of like what I'm experiencing as a speaker is that someone sitting in the front row with their iPhone texting. It's really no different. And so if you want to be in a meeting, then be in the meeting, you know? And so I'm, of course, can't demand that, but I just want to put that out there. That if the whole goal is to be in the now, then practice being in the now, even in the meetings to the speaker or with each other, because you never know where that message is going to come from that you need to hear, right? So just, you know, a strong consideration is all I'm going to say about that. So today I'm going to talk about regret, as I believe that not recognizing and dealing with regret, which translates into unfinished business, can be just as deadly to us as anything else. I would also like to acknowledge all the other A's that are on this line. I know that the alcoholic addict tends to get the top billing, but you are equally as important to all of us. And I just want to say welcome and thank you for being here. First, I would like to thank God. Thank you for what you've given me, for what you've taken from me, and for what you've left me. And that is the real essence of step 7, going to God for all things, that my life is no longer my business, and to accept the divine order and timing of everything. That this is a very tall order, particularly the divine order and timing of things. And I still struggle with that principle and concept with me at times, for sure. So when people reach out to me via the program and ask me to sponsor them, I have an agenda if we are meant to work together. One, my goal is to point you to a power that will solve all your problems by showing you how to access that place inside of us where our heart, mind, and our soul intersect. That sacred place that is only meant for the divine and me. Remember, it is God first, then me, then the people around me in order of importance under God, not above him. My second agenda is also to teach teachers to teach. Step 12, that you are going to take this program and this process and this message and go help somebody else. You're going to pay it forward. Because when you involve yourself in a workshop or with a sponsor or go through the step, these are months and months of time that we can't get back, that we freely give to someone. So pass it on, pay it forward as outlined in our process that we do with the BBA. And my third agenda is a selfish one. And that is that I have a selfish reason in working with others, and that is to create a community around me that when, not if the day comes that I'm in trouble, that no matter how much time you have, that you're going to talk to me from a spiritual place and lead me to a spiritual solution. Because at most times, at 36 years in the program, I have the most time in the room. And maybe it's that two-year-old that's going to have that voice for God for me, right? And you can't be afraid. If it's principles before personalities, then principle meaning the way I act, then you can't be concerned about how I'm going to respond or how I'm going to take it. Or she's got the time. She knows what she's doing. No, I don't. Because at 18 and a half years, I was dying from untreated drug addiction in the room, speaking, sponsoring, sharing, had commitments. I was around the program, but I wasn't in it. So just know that you might be saving my life sometime. And I encourage you to step up. So when I'm asked to speak, I take it very seriously, as though, yes, I am Kimberly and I'm speaking. But because I've been graced with recovery, I believe I have a higher calling. I need to live at a higher standard for myself. Today, I not only represent the BBA and Dan Sherman, who is my sponsor, my actions also reflect on Carol, who asked me to speak, which reflects on her and this and the work in this meeting that we're all trying to pass on. As soon as I think that this is my message, my program, and my God, that idea immediately separates me from everyone and everything. My responsibility is to carry this message and to live this program and to have a relationship with our Father. There is only one path. We can just walk it many different ways. So I'm going to speak about regret and how regret and unfinished business can affect us today. We spend a tremendous amount of time getting to the inventory where we speak about fact-finding and fact-facing truths about our lives, imaginary or real. We look extensively at resentments, that being the number one offender, that it kills more alcoholics because it separates me from the power, this long, slow-burning anger that we cannot afford to live in. We look at what is behind these resentments, and we see how our fears, real or imaginary, drive all of our delusions and illusional thinking. So we live our life by a story that just isn't true, though we believe it is. Then we look at our sex conduct and go to the grave secrets. Usually this is some act or thought that we don't want anyone to know. The part that doesn't get addressed in an emotional enough way is regret. That there is no real place for it in our inventory, though it can be attached to a resentment or fear. Certainly regret affects our sex relations. And yes, we can mention it in our go to the grave or anything else that falls outside the resentment, fear, sex. But I really want to speak to this specific word. Regret or unfinished business creates a form of personal suffering that we just never quite get past. We assume that this is just the way it is and it's the way it's going to be. No matter how many inventories we write, no matter how much we talk about it, it just never goes away, this feeling of regret. And we assume that we just have to live with it. I believe in part it's because we are praying for the wrong thing and we're not clear about the exact nature of the regret. We never get to the essence of the regret. And so we never get totally free. So what's the definition of regret? A feeling of sadness, repentance, or disappointment over something that has happened or been done. And I have found in my experience that regret usually falls under two categories. I would have done something, or I wish I would have said something. The Big Book mentions regret, but not outright in the way that I'm going to speak about it, but it is most certainly applicable. On page 83, it says, "We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it." It has been my personal experience that these regrets can be as deadly as resentments. Regrets or unfinished business can cause depression, relapses, suicides. Sometimes these regrets never allow us to truly be able to connect with anyone. And we most certainly are rarely in the present moment or in the now because we live with this unfinished business that conscious or unconscious is many times in our mind that I'm not even aware of it. So I'm going to do something with my mother. So when I run into a woman or someone who, you know, brings up something about my mother, or I'm sensing something that is familiar to me about my relationship with my mother, you know, I'm not in the present moment with that individual. I'm taking what happened with my mother and I, and I'm slapping that, you know, that experience onto this current relationship in front of my face. And yet that person really hasn't done anything to me, but I'm acting as if I did. It did. And so this is where we, you know, take our Louis Vuitton luggage from our past and we bring this all forward and we stick it on our relationships that really have nothing to do with you and me. But because of this regret that I have that I can't get clear on, that I can't get free from, that I'm not even really aware of. I am, but I'm not. You know, it's not like we constantly think about it, but it pops up that, you know, there is a solution to all that. So on page 73 into action, when they talk about people who invariably got drunk, the book says, we think the reason is that they never completed their house cleaning. I want to point out that they're not saying completed their inventory. They say complete their house cleaning. Our inventory is step 4, which is the pile of junk. The house cleaning is getting rid of that, which are steps 5 through 9. And by this time, we've also discovered that on our own, we can't get rid of the junk. I can only see it. I can't make it go away because lack of power is my dilemma. Yes, we all have regrets about our actions and attitudes. And step 10, we'll take care of the ones we currently do by watching our behavior and behaving and then living in step 11. But I'm talking about past regrets, perhaps those that are deceased, people that are gone. And so when we have unfinished business with someone or something in our past, that very silently continues to haunt us. And we do inventory after to pray. But we live in this silent suffering of these regrets. We just live with this pain or idea that is constantly on my mind. But there's a solution for that. And we also learned that if we don't find relief through a spiritual way of life, then I'm going to find relief the only way I know how. And for me, that's to do drugs. I also use or eat, drink, or fill in the blanks, whatever it is you suffer from and need an act of God in your life for. I recently got a call from someone asking me to help them do step work regarding her family. She thought she owed them an amends to her deceased grandparents and mom. But after speaking with her for a few minutes, it wasn't an amends that needed to be done. It was a regret that she had. She wished she had done more things differently. She wished she had said more things, and now they're dead. This idea intuitively came to me to ask her to write a letter to them to say all these unsaid things. But there's more to a letter than this than just throwing up on the page. And I'm not a big person to offer that up. So it was really divinely guided that this thought came to my mind. I rarely ask people to do that. She was struggling to write it and wasn't quite able to get down to the meat of it. So I told her that I would give her an example of one by writing one about my mom. When she reached out to me a couple of weeks ago, as some of you know, my mother died in January this year. And last week we got the date on which to bury her. So I will be flying back to Wisconsin in a couple of weeks to do that with my family. Some of you also know that my relationship with my mother has been the most difficult relationship of my life. Since we got the date of her burial, a lot of emotions, anger, past conversations, and actions have come up a lot. I was really surprised at how angry I was feeling every time I would think about her and how hurt I was. I believe, though I sponsor people, I continue to be taught by them. So I'm not sure who needed to do this piece of work more, her or me. I'm going to read to you a regret letter sounds like and what making peace with that regret looks like. Now, this cannot just occur by writing a letter. I've done a tremendous amount of work in this area of my relationship, applied the steps and principles of this program to my relationship over the many years. I've sought out professional help, among other things. This was not by far an overnight fix, but a healing has most certainly taken place. I hope you can hear my letter to my mother in the way it was meant, which is a daughter who just wanted her mother to love her and the regrets I had with her. I will have the opportunity to go by her and my father's grave on my way back to California. And I plan on taking this letter with me and reading it to her. Here we go. Mom, there are so many things I want to say to you. And at the same time, I'm still stuck as that kid that you just don't talk back to your parents. I'm surprised that I'm finding this letter so difficult to write. I guess I'd hoped with all the years of work I'd done on our relationship that much of what I am feeling now had just been resolved. Perhaps it really is. It just needs to be said out loud. God knows I've rehearsed most of this in my head over many, many years. You don't know how badly all my life that I wanted and needed you just to be proud of me, to have a loving, supportive relationship, that I could come to you with anything as I see many of my friends be able to do with their mothers. I envy them. I've been jealous of them. I've been sad and angry also because of how I see they look at each other, and I just didn't have that with you. The years I literally tortured myself emotionally and the way I live my life just to get you to pay attention to me, that I could never seem to please you. I just couldn't quite get it right. You in so many ways made my life a living hell, and I resent the shit out of you for that. Much of what you did was so unnecessary. It was beyond harsh, mean, unkind, and unsupportive. I just wanted you to love me. Strange how it took till I was 62 years old to have the guts to finally ask you the ultimate question. Why don't you like me? Why do you hate me? Spending most of my life in anger, hurt, trying to prove to everyone, especially you, you of all people who could never seem to appreciate the fact that you had a daughter that was literally dying for your love. That is pathetic. Using drugs was the greatest freedom of my life because I didn't have to think or feel about you, you and Dad. He wasn't any better. I've eaten over you, used drugs over you. I question myself all the time. I feel completely lost at times. Of course, I'm never good enough, and I'm always having to work harder, be better than others, as I'm starving for some crumb of attention from anyone. And now that I'm going to have to stand one more time in front of you to say goodbye like a good little soldier that we were raised to be, I hate that I'm being put in this position. That sharp, thoughtless tongue of yours cutting like a knife. Yet I honestly believe that you thought our relationship was nothing like what you had with your mother. And I'm sure that it's true. But if what we had was better than what you had nothing short of a miracle that you survived, as I was considering suicide when I was 15 years old. Do you know how embarrassing it was to have people look at me with those sad, pitiful eyes, feeling sorry for me, when you would make your feelings known with some unkind comment that you felt that needed to be said out loud for no apparent reason? I made my amends to you regarding my drug addiction over 35 years ago, yet somehow I always felt like I was paying for it. I don't owe you another amends or an apology. I think my life speaks for itself. I cannot say sorry enough for what I put you and Dad through regarding my drug addiction, yet I've always felt that all these years, it has always been just below the surface. You never forgot and you never forgave. What in the hell more could I have done to show you that I've changed over the past 36 years? I was never going to be the way you wanted me to be. I somewhere in my logical head knew that because there would be absolutely nothing I could do to make it right with you. That most of our relationship really had nothing to do with me. Your verbal attacks, the unprovoked comments, constant judgment. It was only until I had access to power and became willing to tell you that I could no longer speak, you could no longer speak to me the way you have and treat me the way you did. That is when my life changed and our relationship did too, for the better. My friends who met you thought you were such a bitch, yet I defended you. They could not believe your snide, snippy, constant jabs at me. One of my friends was so upset, she had to leave the table. You were always right and I was always wrong. That's just the way it was. Knowing that you never were going to apologize for anything. It was all just swept under the rug. Move on. But I didn't. I couldn't. I haven't. I still cling to some of the incidences we've had. Yet here we are as your children, fiercely loyal to that Levesser clan, constantly saying to ourselves that that was then and this is now. Well, screw that. You would think if you were that miserable in your marriage and life that after Dad died, you'd be happy. You would have changed for the better, but you didn't. You actually directed that high beam, bitter attitude at anyone who was within your sights. Unfortunately, most of the time it was me, whether I was close or afar. Do you know what it was like to show up at your house and go out in public to some event and people don't even know you have a daughter? I would be standing next to you as you were talking to them and they were looking at me like, who are you? You wouldn't even step up and say, oh, I'm sorry, this is my daughter. I would be the one to stick my hand out to shake theirs and introduce myself. What the hell was that? Seriously? As I stand there feeling completely embarrassed and invisible, yet I would come back to visit you for years. I loved you as much as I hated you. Doing all this with several years of recovery, constantly bring God into every waking moment when I'm with you, working so hard to remember who I really am, which is a child of God, not yours. You didn't deserve to be my mother, but you were. I've come to accept that in name only. It was only until I moved to California and found older women who gladly and graciously accepted me into their lives, and they became the mother to me that you never would or could be. I'm so grateful that I got as far away from you as I could find my own life, create my own community, to find women who would mentor me, act like my mom, the type of mom I needed, that would listen to me, laugh with me, support me, and just wanted me to be happy, not in the way they needed me to be, but to be happy for me. It became abundantly clear many years ago that you were just never going to be that mother. And for me to continue to want you to be different meant that I was in a delusion, as you showed me time and time again who you are. There's a part of me that hates you, and there's a part of me that loves you to death. You're my mother, good or bad. There were times when we were able to laugh and have a good time. It took constant work on my part to remember what my truth was. That was accessing the power of God in my life. The only reason we even have a relationship was the very thing you despised, my drug addiction. You experienced both sides of it, the untreated and the treated drug addict. After years of staying clean, living the principles, continuing to grow and enlarge my relationship with God, I got to see you not from this hurt child, but as a woman looking at another woman. Yes, I have lots of stories I could go on and on about and continue to relive, but I'm not going to be that wounded woman anymore. You can't hurt me anymore. And I know that you are at peace too. I actually think you feel sad at how your behavior and attitude has affected my life so tremendously. You have been my greatest teacher because you tried to make me someone I am not. You have shown me what I don't want to be, and that is you, this bitter, self-righteous, entitled right fighter who lives life like a closed fist, always reacting, never realizing how your words cut like a knife and actually not really caring. I ultimately know that you are not mean or a bad person. I've heard you speak about your family and your relationship with your mother. It was horrible. I can only imagine if I feel the way I do about a relationship, what the hell you must have felt like as a young woman. The courage it took you to leave your family, to marry a man who also had huge childhood problems and had no idea how to express love. You get pregnant 4 times, and the most of the time you are alone, and all the responsibility of raising 4 little kids, running a house, being in a loveless marriage, following this man all over the world in his military career. How unimportant, unvalued, and alone you must have felt most of your life. I honestly don't know how you did it. You stayed with this man through his illness until his death. Your courage and strength were astounding. The respect I have for you is immense. That is why my relationship with you has been so hard. I hate you for the things you've done, and I love and respect you so much. And so you, a woman with a 6th grade education, with a father who didn't believe in educating women, a husband who could give a shit about what happened to you as he was dying, took charge of things and amassed an incredible life for herself and passed that on to her children.
Two more minutes.
I know that you loved me, that you respected me, and that you are proud of me. I thank God every day for giving me the courage and the willingness to confront you about our relationship last year. Because of your incredible character traits, I have been able to be that strong, proud woman that you were. You are, in that way, have given me so much. You raised me to never need a man, to stand on my own, and that I can achieve anything if I work hard for it. You've instilled in me a sense of who I am and who I am not. Because of you, you raised me. I am now able to be of service and connect with people in a very powerful way. That is the gift you gave me. You trying to take that from me as a child just made me more committed to not be like you and to do the right thing for me. Imagine of all the ways you could have died. You died with me holding your hand, humming to you, brushing your cheek and hair, kissing your cheek, telling you over and over again, I love you, like a daughter would to her mother. Me, the one you've been the cruelest to. This would never have been possible without my foundation of recovery and the incredible support I've gotten all along, both professionally and personally. I am so, so grateful that I could do that for you and be there for you in that moment. And now you are gone. I know that I will always love you and call you my mother. I am making the decision to move on with my life, not yours. I am ready and willing and to be happy. And it is time for me to let go of the pain and be free. Goodbye, Mom. Goodbye, pain, Kimberly. Thank you.
Thank you, Kimberly. Thank you very much for speaking with us today. I'm going to stop the recording.